Hello, everyone. Welcome to yet another episode of Omaha Talks. I'm your co-host, Parker Steele, here with co-host
Brandon Herbel.
Today, got a very special guest, an old friend.
We brought him up a few times.
Brought him up a couple times, definitely. Welcome, Jeff Aikenbauer, to the show. What's up, Jeff?
Hey, how are you guys doing? Thanks for having me on.
Doing very well. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, yeah.
Little backstory. Brandon and I have known Jeff for about a decade.
Yeah.
And,
which is crazy.
Which is crazy.
I think about now, like, a decade, like, it's a long fucking time, but it doesn't seem that long ago, like, for a lot of the things that we relate back to.
Well, yeah, when you're, like, 23, a decade.
That's, like, most of your life, you know? You're like, yeah. Jesus, you know?
Yeah, being 23 and thinking about being 34, like, nah.
Yeah, or if you're going to make it to there, whatever. That, yeah, it's like, it feels like a flip book, you know, like all the pages just go by really fast and there's just like fragments of, you know, like memories and shit.
True.
You know what it is, though? It's fucking bills. Work. Yeah, work. That's what takes up your life after that. You hit your 20s and you got a fucking reality.
I know. It's great.
It is great, anyway, yeah.
Today, wanted to have Jeff on because we were chatting on the phone the other day. And I just kind of had an epiphany. I'm like, well, Jeff, you should come be on the podcast. We should reminisce and maybe talk about some music because, Jeff, I don't know if you know this. You probably do. You should. You showed me so much music when we started hanging out that all directly influenced my music. And it's stuff that, like, I'll always listen to. And, like, you really opened up a lot of doors for me. And we talk about a lot of times, you know, Brandon and I, growing up in Grand Island, that didn't have a lot of exposure to stuff. Like, I didn't hear a lot of, like, I didn't hear the Stooges until I was 22.
Right, okay. Right.
Didn't even know what it was. It just, I didn't see it. And so I definitely owe you a lot of gratitude for that because it definitely changed my life for the better. As far as musical tastes go, and pretty big stuff. So I was going down the list today of bands that Jeff Aikenbauer turned me on to that changed my life. And number one, pretty obvious, is J. Retard.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's number one. And then the whole Memphis thing follows that. Oblivions.
The Goner stuff.
All the Goner stuff that was going on. Digital Leather.
Yeah, that's weird. I think I had bought Monologue from Jay, I believe, and Jay just told me to buy it, and I was floored. I was blown away by how good it was.
It's amazing.
I think I just wanted to show everyone how, like, good that record was. And
I'd never heard anything like that, you know? Yeah. Well, I mean, one thing that was kind of interesting, like, and I've totally talked about this before, like, the punk rock, quote unquote, kids in Grand Island really turned me.
It was like mall punk shit, though.
Yeah, right? it was mall. Like, it turned me off from even paying attention to that side of the road. But then, like, being exposed to some of the records that you turned me on to, it was like, oh, this is rock and roll.
Right.
This is rock and roll. You know, this is like leather jacket rock and roll. And that kind of, and then kind of redefined, or maybe even defined, what punk rock is. To me, you know what I mean?
Totally, or
what it is, you know? Like, I just had this, like, small-town, filtered, misconstrued perception of what that was, and I don't want anything to do with it, you
right.
know?
I remember him living above the Dollar General and grilling out on the roof and, like, listening to records, like, all night. It was just awesome. I remember.
Yeah, I would like to probably forget some of those times at the Family Dollar apartment.
Oh, but, my God.
They were good. Yeah. They were good times. Lots of parties. I spent some time in Grand Island when playing shows at the Circle. Was it Circle B?
Circle B.
And it was definitely like this polarization of like when I played a few shows there with Brimstone Howl and. There was just this polarization, like, everyone wanted to hear, like, more of an emo genre.
Right.
Like,
because we're talking, like, 2005, 2006?
Yeah.
Everyone in that era was just, into, like, Saves the Day and mm-hmm. fucking Newfound Glory and all that type and of
it
shit.
It was cool that these kids from Grand Island, like, you know, Palmer and I think Worms or what those guys were from, these small, like, towns.
So,
Elliot Wagner and Justin Sinkbile and all those guys.
So that, okay, we should actually, let's dig even a little bit deeper. So,
Wait, real quick, what is the Circle B? What is it normally? I've been to.
I think it was just like a 50 place shows there, that you could rent.
Yeah, it was like a hall, like a union hall or something.
Yeah, you
it
made
was...
your back end on whatever you took at the door. To...
Okay.
But there was weird like cowboy.
Yeah, the weird shit. Real, yeah, from like the 50s weird
stuff on the wall.
Yeah, and we grew up there
with like vines, vines, and like I remember like a white picket fence, like all weird.
Yeah, there was
shit.
Like lattice behind the stage.
It was weird. It was totally strange.
It was very strange. But okay, so that. That's actually super interesting. We should talk about that. So although you and I didn't meet, I met you in Omaha at Oliver's, but you knew people from our area, Brimstone Howl, because you played with them.
Yes.
How did that even happen?
It was strange, actually. I was actually a Zyklon B for a while. I guess... John and Nikki and Calvin from Brimstone Howl were looking for a bass player. Their former bass player parted ways and they had a seat.
Chauncey?
It was Jillian.
Okay.
They parted ways and I knew John and Nick and Calvin from, I think we went to a Dirt Bomb show together in Des Moines and the Ponies opened up. It was great show. We went and kind of had a car ride and it was really fun and we kind of just shot the bull about music and like, we all kind of like, oh, we like the same stuff. And they just asked me to play. And I think they, you know, a few weeks later and they had a release show coming up and I practiced with them twice and played the Lincoln release. And, you know, from there, they just kept me on. And
do you guys remember Caesar the Greaser? Were you guys
that
far back?
Band before Zyklon B.
Yeah, show Caesar the Greaser.
So I've seen footage of them.
Yeah. I mean, so in high school, Austin Ulmer, who we were talking about earlier and have brought
Science
up in the podcast,
team.
He was the first kid I ever met in high school. Like I had just moved there from Hastings and I sat at his lunch table and like that's how I met like all these other people. But he was in the Science Ninja team and that's like how I met Elliot Wagner and all those guys. So yeah, Caesar the Greaser. I remember going to like Perkins where you could still like smoke cigarettes in that little area. Just like drink coffee and
The first show I ever played was opening for Science or I don't know what it was, but playing with Science Ninja Team and Caesar the Greaser. I didn't know any of those guys. Grew up in the same town, didn't know them. It was weird.
Was that at Bonsai?
That was a Bonsai.
I was there. I remember that.
Yeah.
It's crazy that those guys. Kind of what branched off that they were all capable of doing like that small town stuff.
Pretty
like,
amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty comfortable in saying that like, those dudes were way ahead of what we were listening to. Like, I don't know. Like, especially like John and his style of songwriting and stuff. Like,
I think, he was meat and potatoes. I think he liked like blues and rock and like American music and just wanted to rock it out. And I think that people were too afraid of doing that because it sounded too old man or something.
Right.
You know?
Right. But, yeah. Well, I mean, it was in the haze of like nu metal and effects and whatever, you know, processing. And here's a dude that just shredded on like, a nice guitar and a Fender Deluxe Reverb and
nobody was playing those amps. Nobody, everyone wanted.
You could actually buy them.
Yeah, you could actually for $500. I remember going with John, I believe, to some guy's house to look at. I think he bought this like $500, you know, like Twin Reverb or something. Maybe it was Nikki, but it was like $500 or $600 in those amps. Now you know it was like a different time, totally different time.
And that wasn't that long ago. You know, I mean, really, in the scheme of things,
for sure.
As far as like, I don't know, it's just crazy how that all turned around. But it speaks to him being ahead of his time, as far as that's concerned. So anyway, you start playing with Brimstone Howl. The first time I ever met you, actually, let me take that back. Maybe even encountered you was at your last show that you played with Brimstone.
Oh, okay.
And it was Austin that was like, you got to go to the show. Because I think you guys had met. He had been to your wedding, and you were already kind of hanging out, and that was kind of the beginning of it.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until however. So Brimstone, you stopped playing with Brimstone, and then the Shanks happened.
Yeah,
and
that was actually happening, but like while Brimstone was happening, we actually recorded a 7-inch with Liz and Brooks, and I didn't know that they were going to put it out. Todd didn't know, Hot Rod Todd, right. And Liz. I remember being on tour once, and Liz said, "Hey, we're just going to put out that 7-inch. You guys didn't." I think everyone was like, why? Like, what? Like, yeah. Really? Okay.
Was that Cut Me?
That was Cut Me. Yeah. And I don't know. I'm grateful for that, though.
Yeah.
In hindsight, it was cool because it was like something Todd and I had kind of like thrown together. And, you know, we didn't know what was going to happen with that project. So
how did you? Okay. So like, it's so funny. I've known you guys for years, but I've never actually asked anybody these questions. So, like, okay. Johnny is from Des Moines. Todd is from all Utah. We'll just stick with
Utah. Well, yeah, Utah, Idaho,
yeah, Florida. Idaho. Yeah, we'll stick with Idaho. Yeah.
And, Washington.
How did that... I mean, how did you guys even meet?
I knew Todd. Todd and I were in a band together in a basement band that never got off the ground way before... I was like 19.
Janitors?
It was before Janitors of Tomorrow.
Okay. And
we had several names and we recorded some stuff and we just never got it off the ground, but we were always hanging out.
Yeah.
And when I kind of joined Brimstone Howl, he had started Janitors of Tomorrow.
Okay.
And we had just been friends. I've known Todd since I was like 19.
That's crazy.
And yeah, that project just got started. I think he was kind of done with Janitors and yeah. Brimstone was my time there, you know, was kind of done.
Yeah.
And Todd and I just went full force, and I think our goal was to destroy music in a very strange way. It turned out to be something beautifully stupid and crazy. It was crazy. It was just very crazy. And the music is, you know, I stand by some of it, but a lot of it was in a haze of, you know, of just people in different times, you know, like I'm a totally different person. Like every one of us in that band looks back on it like, you know, like we're proud of it, but it was definitely like different.
There's only one. There's a very like narrow window of your life that you can do that, you
know, yes.
Like wild rock and roll stuff. And that was kind of when our worlds collided because like after, whatever, after that last Brimstone show, and then we went to a Shank show and, I mean, I was with, you know, Jeff and Austin, whatever, and Jack. And I was just like, holy shit. That's what I'm looking for. You know what I mean? And we all kind of had this similar thing. Like, oh, that's what we were looking for. Because we're all out of towners playing music in Omaha. Not really sure where, you know. Like, it wasn't as easy to navigate now.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, it was hard. And Olivers, especially not knowing people. And the only thing that was really, like, a surface level accessibility was, like, Saddle Creek Records. Well, we weren't doing anything that would even remotely relate to that scene or sound or whatever, which is okay, you know. And so seeing you guys in the Shanks, one of the biggest things was there wasn't a coolness, like the Too Cool thing. There was none of that. It was like unabridged. It was just rock and roll. It was just wild, like spitting beer on each other, you know, going nuts. And it was just rock and roll. It wasn't fancy. There wasn't any, you know, like breakdowns or whatever. It just made sense. And Olivers in whatever, 2006, 2007, you know, was kind of the wild, wild west where the shows would be wild, you
yeah,
know,
oh, yeah.
And beer would fly around and like something might hit you in the face, but it was your buddy or whatever. It was nuts. And it was like that experience that I know, like, Austin and Jeff and Jack and I, we were like, oh yeah, this is what's up. And I don't remember exactly, I mean, I'm sure most of it had to do with Austin, but it seemed like overnight, like Rick Rhythm and the Revengers and Shanks, like we were fast friends. Like we were in
a big gang
immediately, and we started playing shows constantly. Like it was Shanks, Rick Rhythm, Revengers, Shanks.
It was
Rick
like
Rhythm,
a deal, a two-band deal. Like, yeah. People
you get one, you get the other.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing that I think about this, and maybe you'll agree, maybe you'll disagree, but or both you guys, but it just seemed like Omaha wasn't quite interested in what we were doing when we were doing it.
I look back and it was completely unhinged.
Yeah.
A lot of the shows, people often wondered, was it planned? Was it,
sure.
You know, none of those shows were planned to happen the way they happened. Like Todd and I never had this agenda to like, oh, let's like really shock them tonight.
Right,
it just happened.
Yeah.
And we were always about pushing the limits. And I think that we found people, in like friends that were about pushing performance arts barriers and like breaking walls down. Like everyone was so, I felt like everyone was so tight and like walked around like trying to be something, maybe not like musically. And I guess we just didn't care at that time and didn't really, we weren't trying to be rock stars. We were just having a lot of fun, sometimes way too much fun, but it was all about creating something that was, you know, at the time, like it was different here.
And it was honest, and it wasn't, like you said, man, it wasn't thought out. I think like the genuineness of those shows is what locked us in, because we're like, oh man, because we've been hanging out, like trying to navigate what was going on, and then to like show up and be like, oh, these guys don't have their heads up their ass.
Yeah.
I think it was an interesting time too, where like when I first moved here in 2004, like Saddle Creek was still pretty big. But, and not that they've ever went anywhere, but it kind of like died down a little bit here in town.
Sure.
And then Ranch Bowl closed. So like that radio rock, that like, you know, punk emo shit that like would always play there was kind of gone. And so there was like a hole that needed to be filled. And I feel like that's where like Olivers and those types of shows, the more DIY, like house shows, the, Hotel Franks and
There was a lot of shows happening there.
And that type of stuff. I felt like it was a mixture of I don't know. I think there was just like something missing, and that like seemed to come like right at the right time.
Yeah, it was kind of a vacuum, really. I mean, it was kind of like, what's next or what's out there? You know, it's so interesting.
But like in the entire like just landscape too, because I mean it was getting bigger everywhere. I think like that DIY garage rock, like just blown out, like it's not perfect, but it's so fucking good and awesome. Like I don't know, I think everyone had a bigger appreciation for it. It almost got like too big, you know, like
in Omaha was
sold out.
Changing.
I don't want to say sold out, but like
that was a pivotal point, I think, for the town. You know, like I came here right on the cusp. Like I saw the old. For a minute, you know, and like I've seen it change ever since.
But, I mean, shout out to like Terminals. I mean,
well, yeah,
that's like our song.
They played my wedding. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
That's awesome.
It's awesome.
Was it the Carcinogens? Is that the band before?
Yeah, they were. That was Dave
and Chris Estabrooks.
Chris Estabrooks.
Street Urchins.
Yeah, Street Urchins. Very two bands I saw that, you know. Peeled my face back, you know. They were great live bands, and if no one's ever seen them,
I was telling my wife about the Terminals, because Dave was there, like hanging out, and talking to the landlord and a few other people, like a couple months ago, and I was like, they blew me away, like those live shows, the Terminals. It was just like it's hard to even put into words how like awesome it was.
Yeah, they were top tier.
Absolutely.
But I felt that way about, like, the Shanks and Brimstone Howl and, you know, all those shows. Like, Olivers, you just felt like...
Yeah.
You were, like, at that moment, were at a place that you, like, are supposed to be. Like, there's something, like, really cool happening. But, like, I don't know. That's how I felt.
Well, and for lack of sounding like a turd, you know, it was a small scene. Like, it was like there was a style to it. There was a sound to it. There was a likeness to what everybody was kind of doing, you know. And whether or not it was like, I don't think people were like the Shanks didn't sound like Rick Rhythm and the Revengers, but nobody was surprised they were playing together. You know right. what I mean? Like it was yeah. kind of in that vein. But
well, and Johnny came in kind of later in the Shanks, and when Johnny B came in, I had met him. We actually lived in the same kind of house apartment complex together.
Okay.
Later on, but I had met him just through mutual friends, and we were like, we hit it off immediately.
Yeah.
And you know, we just had like this instant connection. We were like brothers. We were kind of inseparable for a while, and he joined, and John was kind of he toured with like Little Brazil and stuff. Mm-hmm. And like, so John had like all these friends that we didn't have as friends. And then they, right. you know, you mingle and you meet different people, and different people find your music interesting, or you find something else to like about a different band you'd never seen before. So then all these other bands start playing together, and it was kind of a cool, it kind of branched into what that a little bit of the scene kind of like happens now, where you get people like the it's mix of people playing plot. Together yeah. now, yeah. you know?
No, that's totally right, man. Like it's not pocketed. You know, like you can go to shows in Omaha, you know, and see so much different stuff, which I think is awesome. You know,
yeah, there's a lot of good bands here.
Absolutely. And there's no reason why it shouldn't be that way. Absolutely. You know what I mean? But anyway, so Jeff, what I want to talk to you about right now, okay, I've already said you turned me on all these great bands. Like, when did you start running down the rabbit hole of record buying and just being kind of a
I was gonna ask that exactly
aficionado. Like how yeah
I you know I it's I have a brother who's 7 years older than me, so and my brother Mike is, you know, he's a godsend. He always pushed stuff on me. And I was really into hip hop in high school, and like into like middle school I had a Wu-Tang shirt, and you know I loved hip hop.
Yeah.
And I loved like the basics. Like I loved like Jimi Hendrix and stuff, but I didn't really get into music. Like, I don't know. I was probably like 17, you know, my brother kind of like started dumping the heavyweights on me, like the Stooges and stuff. And I just have this mentality where I kind of, I get tunnel vision. It's all I can mm-hmm. focus on. And mm-hmm. so I'd be like, oh, who recorded that? Who was on this record, you know? And so like the Stooges comes into MC5, and then, mm-hmm. you know, you just, it, you blow yourself out, and then you look into British rock and roll, and you mm-hmm. know, you, the Kinks, and like, I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And I just became infatuated with music, and especially bands that just like were remarkable live performers mm-hmm. and bands that really like wrote songs that like, there's nothing better than listening to a song that like you get goosebumps and chills and you want to listen to it again right after it's done. Like,
oh, yeah.
So I was like constantly searching. I have a very addictive personality. So I was like constantly searching for like, okay, what can make me feel like that? I love mm-hmm. that feeling. And, rock and roll still does that. There's songs I, you know, can pull out and like, you know, it's just going to make me feel amazing.
Yeah.
The first show I ever went to, my brother took me, I was 15. I went to Smoke and Grooves Tour 2. I loved the Fugees at the time. So my brother took me to go see the Fugees. It was amazing.
That's cool.
Nas, wow. Cypress Hill was there. Busta Rhymes.
Your little brother took you to go see
my big brother. Yeah. So, big brother, yeah. So like he always pushed music on me because he was in love with it himself. And I think from then on, it just like we constantly went to shows together at Sokol when 1% was done at Sokol Underground.
Right.
That was the time of my life. I mean, I saw so many good shows down there, and my brother was just like, yeah, dude, if I can't go with you, just pick a show on there and go, you might like it. I mean,
awesome.
It was like kind of one of those things where you get the little handout that Jim and Mark had at the front, and you'd right. just be like, oh, I've never heard of them. And there was no internet to be like, oh, I can just listen to their album and see if I like it. No, right. you had to do like serious, like hardcore searching. So you would yeah. just go. And some yeah. of the times you'd just be like, wow, that band was great. You yeah. know, or it was awful.
Right.
I remember going yeah. to 3 or 4 shows a night when I first moved here. I remember going to Sokol Underground shows like when still in high school and like drive up from Grand Island. But then when I moved here, I'm like, it's right here. Well, you know, like try to go like 2 or 3 times a week. It was awesome.
Yeah. And Jim and Mark did a fantastic job down at Sokol Underground. Like, I mean, I saw some, Interpol's like first tour, like, you know, oh, it's wow. just like stuff like that.
I saw
like
Arcade Fire in the Underground, and there was maybe 20 people there.
Wow. Yeah, it's weird Arcade to Fire. Think about
and then
that.
A year
yeah.
later, they were like playing sold out arenas and fucking Coachella. And
yeah,
shit.
They've always been kind of on the ball.
That's wild, man. And but, still on the ball. Like, yeah. It's crazy.
We got to get them on here at some point. I bet they have a wild story because, yeah.
Yeah. But keep going. Go ahead.
But that's kind of like where, I mean, I just had a brother that pushed stuff on me. And like I said, I still will go into YouTube or like mm-hmm. Wikipedia, like holes when I'm laying in bed. And it just keeps me up at night because I'm like trying to search for something that I hadn't heard or seen before. Or I look, and now my brother's kind of, in the past 5 years, I've kind of gotten into jazz a lot. So sweet. Like, that's been, I mean, that genre on taking that is, that's limitless, a headache. Dude. It's the worst. It's like, it's endless. It's a vast rabbit hole.
And that is nerdery on a whole different level. Yeah. That, like I'm big into jazz and just got into it, kind of by proxy, like worked downtown, right. Long Yvette, hearing it all the time. And jazz always kind of interested me because I couldn't figure it out just listening to it. It's not verse chorus for, you know, it was like, and especially when you get into improv and whatever else. My problem with jazz is that I'm kind of stuck on the big names.
It's easy to do.
Yeah. And they're available. You know what I mean? Like when you start searching into like the lesser known realm of old jazz, that is, whoa, like that's something else. But that's awesome that you're checking it out, man.
Yeah. Yeah. It's jazz just
great.
It's one of those things where it's like, okay, I'm trying to feed my, you know, my hunger, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm constantly doing that.
So when you started buying, like clearly Mike was already doing the vinyl thing.
He had a massive CD collection, okay. And up until I was probably 19 is when I started collecting records. And then,
so you're going to the Antiquarium.
Yeah. Antiquarium all the time. You know, and it's just Homer, you know, wherever had used records or, you know, until the internet became like readily available, like Discogs and stuff.
Right.
Like, is kind of how it was. So
speaking of, you guys both appreciate this. I don't know if he listens to the show. I hope he does. Neil from Jurassic Plastic.
Yes.
I haven't seen him in years. Bumped into him yesterday at Hy-Vee.
Nice.
I've not seen that guy. He actually gave me some of my first jazz records.
Oh, cool.
I came in there. I had
His name's not Neil.
Is it Mike?
Rick.
Oh, Jesus. I was calling him Neil.
Oh, it's Rick. Are you talking about Rick? Ponytail Rick?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, ponytail
Rick. I sound like an asshole. Well, it's been years.
Yeah, I mean,
been
Rick's like, cool, 10 years, man. Yeah, Rick, the used by Rick.
Rick, the used by Rick. So,
yeah, Rick was amazing.
Dude,
I worked
great
with him
guy.
For a year.
Yeah, I worked with him for a little bit. Him and Billy.
Him, yeah.
Yep,
yeah.
Same here.
Yeah. Oh my God. This is totally memory lane.
Which, you know, that was weird too. Like, I felt like I had some kind of like one up on people, like saying that I worked at Jurassic Plastic. It's such a like history of the old market. It was like badass to like have worked there when they were still selling records. I mean, now it's just a t-shirt store.
They have their record store underground.
Yeah. There's,
yeah.
They're actually, they're like putting records out.
They're yeah, they're putting records out, but there's a record store below it?
Yeah, no, like down a block.
Oh, okay.
Jurassic Plastic Underground.
I didn't realize.
I bought a Lords of the New Church record that I think they had a hand.
Yeah, they re-released it.
Yeah. Which I almost didn't believe. I'm like,
yeah, they did all the birthday party stuff too.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah,
remember that.
They did some gun club stuff.
It's badass. But, God, I can't believe I
quickly,
called him.
Interesting story, too, though, is that...
you remembered my name.
Yeah.
What a dick. God.
It happens.
But he, you know, he was always super warm, you know, and he was one of those guys, like...
He was like a dad to us.
Yeah, like, he was like...
Like, when I was working there, I mean, we were like... I mean, we had, you know...
We were little kids, dude. Yeah. I mean, we were... this guy, wealth of knowledge, and he... Yeah, I came in there, I, like, on an off chance... bought a Duke Ellington record, and I was like, I'm going to give this a shot. You know, I've never done this. And he's like, oh, stay right here. Goes to the back, grabs Dave Brubeck Quartet record. And he's like, check this out. Let me know what you think about it. It's like one of my favorite records ever. I mean,
he had a hand in like slapping that in your hand.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. so badass. God, I feel like an idiot. So you start buying records. You start going down the rabbit hole of
you buying didn't call stuff. Neil, did you?
I think I did.
Ugh. Oh boy,
I think I did. Ugh. Yeah, there. He didn't recognize me at first. Like, you know, who's this? yeah, but it's okay.
Yeah.
So you know, like. You were doing this thing at a time when you, it wasn't popular. And you know, it's so funny that even now in 2018, people are like, vinyl's making this big comeback. It's like, oh.
Yeah, it's always, I think it's always been there.
It's always been there. You just weren't paying attention. Like you'll read some headline in like a new, and it's like, oh, vinyl's, it's like, no. The people that were buying it, I don't feel ever stopped. The guy's like your older brother. You know what I mean?
You look at people like, I mean, there are people in Omaha that have massive record collections.
Yeah.
You look at someone like Derek Higgins, who's like, you know, got a mountain of, you know, records.
Right.
There are massive collectors here.
Yeah.
And
Aaron
people,
Ty.
Yeah. I mean, just people that know a ton about music who are like super involved in buying vinyl. And I feel like now everyone kind of notices it because there's like, you know, maybe men in their 50s that are like, oh, look, they repressed the Chicago record they didn't need to repress.
That oh, look, Mumford & Sons, put this out on wax.
Yeah, like, they're repressing a lot of vinyl that doesn't necessarily need to be, too, you know? Like,
right.
Stuff that's, in like, still readily available that they're, you know.
Right.
So I think that they're marketing it to make money.
And that'll just pass like everything else. You know what I mean? People will quit buying. They'll buy the four records and the shitty little single console record player. No offense if that's where you're listening on. But it'll pass like everything else. But yeah, that's something that always kind of frustrated me. And not somebody that, I mean, I didn't get into vinyl until around the time I met you. But that's something that I definitely noticed immediately. I'm like, no, these people, I don't think these people bought those 2000 records last year.
Yeah.
You know, like, this has been going on for a while.
Yeah, small labels have been putting out 7-inches and, like, records for a long time. It's just, like, it hit a fad. Now it's, like, I'm glad, you know? It's good for bands to be able to make money and sell a product. Absolutely. So.
I know, man. Like,
I think it's something I need to do a bit. I don't know. It sounds like you guys obviously find the time for it. But, like, we have a record player. We have, like, a couple hundred records upstairs. I just, like, can never find the time to just sit and, like, put on a record.
Well, it does take time.
It does.
I mean, that's you're listening to a record now.
Yeah.
You know, like,
but I feel like I just, yeah, to make more of a point. It's something, you know, in the last few years, you know, kind of lost touch, you know.
Well, I feel like as you get older, especially with us being parents, you know, like all that's of us, like, it's very hard to, with a busy lifestyle, sometimes that, you know, you make time to, like, read to your kids or whatever, like, Van, my oldest, so like, he loves records, you know, so like, I've kicked him a few, and you know, he loves like Devo, and like, he's really into Metallica right now, and like, which is strange, but he loves the Beatles, so like, I mean, he'll listen to them, and we'll like make time, and I'll show him things, but
it makes me want to go upstairs after this and like show Rilo and Van some stuff, you know.
Yeah,
like, absolutely, like, man.
Yeah, I don't know,
but at the same time, it's like, you know, when they're in school, life is busy, and you don't want to, like, sit around and listen to records with your kids necessarily all the time. They want to be outside, and it's like...
No, for sure.
Yeah, you know, I kind of, like, liken it to, like, a fireplace. You know what I mean? Or something. It's like, it's a time for, like, stillness and, like, paying attention. You know, like, I listened to, you know, having a baby and living in apartments for years and stuff. It's like, I like music to make my ears bleed, especially rock. You know, if I'm listening to rock and roll, like, I want it to break glass and whatever.
Absolutely.
Like live music. And listen to most of my music in the car these days, because that's the only place that I can, you know, get nasty. So now that I've been listening to things at lower volumes with the baby around, kind of getting like a different appreciation for it. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, and there's certainly, and I guarantee you the three of us would agree that, you know, although we dig vinyl and are into that, but not necessarily vinyl snobs, you know, like, not going to be like poo-pooing what, I mean,
I don't vinyl. Yeah. I'm not into vinyl grading or, you know,
vinyl grading,
you know, like I don't get that far. And, you know, at this point in my life, like, I kind of talked to you a little bit about it, Parker, but like, I'm like letting go of all mine. And a lot of it is, like, I feel like as you get older, like people put a lot of emphasis on like hobbies and like stuff to keep their mind busy. And I'm kind of like in that zone where I'm like more into like what I can do for my family and, like not being really tied to materialistic things. This sounds really mm-hmm. crazy to some people, but I feel like letting go of like kind of things that like keep my mind kind of trapped. Like I would obsessively look at things like what can I buy? Like I would get paid and I'd be like, okay, I can afford that now. And it'd be like, that money could be used for like other things, you know, like for like trips with my family or, and I feel like now I've sold off like most of my collection for various reasons. And I'm down to like the end of it. And it's a freeing feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I don't have to worry about like collecting that. And it's to some people that sounds crazy, but to me it sounds like I'm letting go of something to like free my like time for something else and like be able to afford other things, you know?
Right.
So,
well, and I mean, you know, I would say you got what you were looking for out of those when you wanted it, you know? So it's not like something that just went to the wayside by any means.
Yeah.
It's like,
is there any like quintessential ones that you're going to save for the kids or?
Yeah, I've got some held back for my kids and stuff that, you know, I've recorded. I've kept a copy for in the time of their life. If they ever want to hear what their dad did, they can, I have proof that I was maybe cool at one point. They just think I'm weird now. They just think I'm totally weird, which is fine. I'm cool with it.
God, I think about
I feel
that.
The exact same way. It's funny, like Rilo, when she was a baby, I mean, I had a clothing store below Liquid Courage, and she was just surrounded by like tattooed people, so it's just like not weird to her at all. But yeah, I don't know. Eventually, you know, I just think they're gonna be like, late 20s or 30s, they're gonna think
it'll be interesting.
It'll take a long
time. It'll be interesting when our kids are old enough to look back and go, "What? You did?"
Shit. And times are gonna be so different by then. Like, what's acceptable in 15 years might be totally different. You know.
But you know the letting go of it too. I don't know. I can fill you on that. I think I have an obsession with like screen printed posters, and like I have them just. I'm running out of room for them. I don't need them. I don't have.
Not that it's an unhealthy obsession, but
for sure. But I mean, at a point too, you know, it's just like.
Then you're just carrying around a bunch of shit. You know what I mean? You move and you're like.
But the family thing, like, it's important. Like, whether you can sell it or just get rid of it, make more room for, you know.
I feel like
more useful.
Having, removing the attachment to things, it's really hard. So it's like one of those training processes in life for me where it was like, okay, I may have to separate myself from this. And sometimes it's really hard. And, you know, sometimes in life you just gotta let stuff go and it's like, and it's like really hard, but I don't know. I think it's kind of made me look at life a little differently, like freed up some of my mind space for like other things to think about, you know? I obviously still, you know, think about music all the time, but it's just like, it's one of those things where, I don't know, I think it benefited me.
You know, I would wager there was one time in my life where I had a big move and I had a big, DVD VHS collection of all movies that I loved and I sold them all and it was rough, but I kind of had a, cause this is, you know, before streaming and all that stuff, you know,
right.
Like this is, if you had it, you had it. And nobody had cable. Are you kidding me? Like none of us had cable, but, Brandon, you probably had cable.
Growing up.
Yeah. No. I mean, when we were younger. You seem to be a little more responsible than.
I don't know.
Well, one thing that I kind of recognized in doing so, and I think you will too, is like then when you do stumble upon that movie or you do stumble upon that record, it's like, oh, because it's not at your fingertips.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And like you're, let's say you're taking a walk or something, or you're on your way to work and you're flipping through Spotify and it's like, oh yeah.
I haven't heard that in a long time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And
this
isn't like,
readily available to me at the moment.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It kind of gives it a little, keeps it special, I think, in your heart a little bit.
Back to the cable thing. That shit is expensive as fuck, and I don't think it's ridiculous. So insane. Like,
it's absolutely
ridiculous. I don't know why the fuck anyone pays over $100.
It's
or more, depending on how many premium sports channels.
You're just watching commercials. Like, you're paying money to watch.
I don't watch enough TV to have it.
I don't watch really any TV, but we have Hulu and stuff. But paying the $11 opposed to $8 for the no commercials thing is pretty tight. But
well,
I can get down on that.
You know, definitely, as you get older and as parents, like, time is your most precious commodity. And again, something that nobody told me. You know, when you're going to be a dad, and I'm a pretty new dad, nobody tells you this shit. Like, hey, you're going to put on 30 pounds and your free time will now become priceless.
Yep.
Priceless. I never knew that taking a shower was going to be like that 10 minutes alone.
You can't close the door in the bathroom. Yeah.
I was going to say, at a point, I would pee, admitting something, I would pee sitting down. It was time to just, like,
reflect for a moment.
It's just like, I'm going to piss.
Take a lot.
Because it's just time for me to just chill for a second.
Yeah,
and
you got
little fingers, like, sticking them
up. Oh, my God.
It's just like a horror movie. Like, yeah. I love them to death. I mean, it's great. It's a...
Love them to death.
It's crazy.
Absolutely. No, I know, man. It's definitely interesting. So, where do you see... I mean... I know you're obviously, like, this is, you're focusing time on your family. You know, you got three little kids. That is so much. I mean, like, I'm talking about having one. I'm, you know, like, that's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. It's the best work, but it's a lot of work.
It is.
Outside of that, though, like, do you see yourself, like, maybe I'm going to dive into film a little bit more, or maybe pay a little bit more attention to other areas of art, or...
Yeah, I'm really into... You know, yeah, I am. I am really into traveling. I have a wife who's really, my wife Sarah is really just into, like, experiencing life. And as yin and yang as we are, we mesh so well because we're kind of opposite. But she's, like, pushed me to, like, open up my eyes to, like, other things, like how important travel is. And, like, experiencing stuff with my kids is by far, like my main goal in life. Is I was kind of sheltered as a youth, like, with, like, you know, going to Adventureland or, like, Kansas City once a year, it was like, all right. But, you know, we're, you know, my kids went to Florida in April. And it was, I never went to Florida. I didn't go to Florida until I was, like, on tour, you know? It was like, and I was, like, 20-something.
Right.
And it's just...
And that's not a vacation.
No, you it's know, not. It wasn't relaxing. It was crazy. So I just feel like just time with family well spent and, like, I don't know. I think about playing music and I don't, you know, and then I don't. I think about jumping back into music and then I, you know, then you find the time to do it and I don't know. People ask me all the time if I'm going to do it and it's like, yeah, maybe. And it, for a while it was going and then I put a halt to it because I had another kid. And
yeah, I mean, that is kind of interesting, you know, when I'm going to go back to our little timeline. So... Shanks End with two last shows.
Yes.
Which were great.
We had a separate band, Saudi Arabia was still happening.
While Saudi Arabia started, which eventually became Dinks.
Dinks Saudi Arabia.
And then after that all ended, you know, there was always Dance Me Pregnant, I guess.
Jesus yeah, that was... Christ. Yeah,
I should have taken notes before this thing, man.
Yeah, Dance Me Pregnant was kind of happening at
that
the same time
a long
as
time.
The Shanks. Yeah.
And
that was...
with Ben Allen.
Well, that's where I'm getting to. So, like, it's just kind of interesting because this was probably about, 4 or 5 years ago.
5 years ago,
And I had started playing with Worried Mothers, which was... weird, you know.
I love that band.
Strange Happenstance. Yeah. Thank you. Me too. Fuck. And then, and you were doing Pleasure Adapter. And here we are, you know, a few years later, playing a show together at the Slowdown, hanging out. It was kind of strange because it was like a completely different landscape a little bit. Like,
it was.
Like, and we were both in entirely different bands.
Entirely different
scene.
Spaces.
Yeah, different
space.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Totally. It was a great show. It was a lot of fun. But, Pleasure Adapter was great, dude. I still like that album. But, and that, like, that was a complete departure from Shanks. Like, I, Like, if anybody went to one of those shows expecting to see any kind of a Shank-like
experience. Maybe towards the end, I think that, you know, with Pleasure Adapter, my goal is, like, I was playing with Ben Allen, and Ben and I, and Joey Kaneko, who is a dear friend of mine who lives in New Jersey now, he's, you know, he was an amazing drummer.
Yeah.
And he just put out an album, and Lydia Lunch is actually on a couple tracks.
No shit.
Yeah, he did a noise record. It's called Kaneko and the Swamp Children.
Wow.
Joey Kaneko and the Swamp Children.
Okay, yeah. That's interesting, because I've seen his boyfriend Mark's Instagram.
Yeah. Like, oh yeah, they like hang. Yeah, she like eats dinner over there and shit. It's weird. Crazy. Yeah, they're like good friends, and
those dudes are so cool though. They you know,
yeah,
they're
Joey's from Jersey.
Supposed to be in Omaha. Like,
yeah, they yeah right, definitely right, right, like.
That just made so much more sense.
Yeah. But I was in, you know, Ben's amazing, and like the, you know, I'm very grateful for that band because they kind of allowed me to write songs. Like yeah. Before, it was like this. What are we going to do? Like, let's throw it together. And at this point I was like sitting in my basement, and I had recently kind of revamped my lifestyle at that point, and was trying to do something different. And that's kind of like the kind of music I love.
Yeah.
Love playing is like, you know, like the '80s kind of dark
wave
stuff.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And it just kind of happened that I was fortunate enough to play with some really good people in that band, like Matt McGinn from Cursive was like a bass player at one time. And like,
Craig,
you know,
D.
Craig D, phenomenal drummer, and you know, Ben Van Hoolen.
And that's right.
Yeah. Ben V and Annie Dylocker.
Yeah.
Who I know she got frustrated with me because I can't read music, but she was fun to be in a band with because she taught me a little bit, you know.
Right.
And then Darren Keane was in that band for a while.
Oh, that's right. He went on tour with you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was fortunate enough to play with some really cool people in that band. But it ended because it needed to, you know.
This is super funny. I just thought of it. When you guys were on tour, Worried Mothers were also on tour. And the text messages between Ben and I, because Ben had never been on the road like that before. Oh my God, dude, I wish I had that phone. They were great. Because you're like, Ben has come up on this podcast so many times. We're going to get him on eventually. And I actually told him last night, I'm like, Eggenbauer's going to be on the show tomorrow, you know? But, which he was excited about. But
one of the most interesting people ever.
Dude, like,
Death Casserole.
I want to tell everybody. Heathcliff would definitely kick Garfield's ass. Death Casserole was a comedy album that our good friend Ben Allen put out a couple years ago, or God, it was probably 10 years ago or whatever. And he put out another one, like a short one or whatever. Funniest shit ever. My skull is a microphone for Satan.
It's bizarre. It's amazing.
So good.
It's amazing.
I always thought that maybe like maybe Doomtown could put out a Death Casserole. Somebody should. Those songs are too good, dude. Like people, I guess you could say that it's in the vein of total silliness, but it's still pretty catchy, pretty easy to listen to. Songs.
Some of it's very off-putting. Like it's like it's kind of like dark and
the
weird.
Children screaming.
Yeah, like mayonnaise hands.
Yeah,
it's just weird. Bush Light and Salt.
Bush Light and Salt. You know who loved Death Casserole? Grave Babies.
Oh, yeah.
Grave Babies loved, because of course Ben Allen became buddies with the guys in Grave Babies. I'm not sure how it happened. I think they
just exchanged tapes and t-shirts or something.
Yeah. But Ben Allen's a great dude, man. And definitely, I mean, I think Jeff and I can both speak to this. And you too, Brandon. Jesus Christ. Like, you guys did clothes together. Jeff and I have both been in bands.
Yeah, you guys printed a lot of stuff together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In that basement.
We bought a printing press that he still is making a living off of now, using the same thing we bought.
So nuts.
I remember being outside of Reinberg's house with him and Kevin. Being like, we should start a print shop. I found the plans on Google. Let's just build one. So we built one and then ended up buying one. But yeah, that all started in the basement.
Yeah, that place was a factory. And the fact that all of us still have functioning lungs, because, like, you guys would print stuff down there, and then we'd have band practice.
Yeah.
Paint thinner. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. So many hazardous. Oh, I remember. Ben's making wine down in the basement.
Yeah, yeah. There's wine ever. I remember.
Cooking quail.
There was. He does. Yeah. Quail. Oh, my God. There was a mold growing on the wall that, like, we just could not kill. And this is when I was playing drums and watching the train wreck for that 6 weeks or whatever. And I was just like, yep. Been breathing that in. Whole lot of it. You know, like right behind me. But we all made it. We're all good. But yeah, Ben Allen's awesome, man. He definitely was a good guy to encourage and facilitate ideas, you know.
Yeah.
Creativity. Always there to keep it going.
He's one of those people too. Like, I mean, he'd never, coming from a band, like he was in watching a train wreck and it was, that band was heavy and thrashy,
yeah.
And for him to like play like 80s, like almost like simplistic, like melodic notes, it was like, very strange to watch him just like, oh, I can do that,
you right?
Know? And it was, he did it, and it was awesome.
Yeah, I know. It was so funny seeing him, like, he had that big effects pedal.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? So ridiculous. Like, oh, this is so weird. One of my favorite Ben Allen stories, and I hope he doesn't mind me telling this, but I have to. So when he was still in Kearney, because we met, mutual friends, playing shows, blah, blah, blah. We'd go down to Kearney and play shows. And, something happened. I think like he and his girlfriend had like a messy breakup or something, like right before he was going to play a show. And it was just a solo show at this like Pat Club, and his parents were there, and there was some family. And so he just got shit faced and sang the song Free Buffet, which is about his funeral. And he's like, you should come, there will be a free buffet. And like, I would pay money to just get a 5 minute clip of that. And it's always the quiet ones, you know, he's like such a quiet, reserved dude,
quiet
and
person.
That is where the real fury comes from. Like, and he said he was just going for it too, like he was just making eye contact with people, seeing his free buffet shit. I don't know, so funny. We got to get him on here to tell that story.
All right, solid.
One more, and we're not going to talk about him anymore because we're just on a roll here. I'm hanging out with Ben, we're drinking a lot of beer. And the girl that I was dating brought her dog over, and she had one of those skinny whippet dogs. It's like a small greyhound. And Ben was rolling around on the ground playing with it. And I was in the other room, but I could hear him talking. And he looked at the girl I was dating, and he's holding the dog, and he goes, I probably wouldn't eat your dog. And she was just like, I think I better go. Like, it got super weird. Like, it wasn't funny for her at all. And I was like,
he knows the right things to say.
Yeah. He looks like he would.
But. Bless that guy.
So, what do you think, Jeff, man? Like, you know, you've done some stuff lately. You brought some bands to town. What are some, a couple, right?
Yeah, I helped. I've been trying to book bands when I can. Brandon actually did a flyer for the last one. Thank you.
Listen, dude, if you ever...
What show was that?
It was Bambra from New York.
Okay.
They're on tour with the band Idols.
Oh, now. You told me about that.
Yeah. I just kind of hit people up, and if I notice they have like a gap, I mean, and they're all bands I really like. I got the Golden Pelicans here. That was a really good show. And the band, the first show I did was, it was Closeness, the band Y-O-U, an electronic kind of synth dark wave punk band. And, yeah, it was, you know, it was a good, all pretty good shows. Yeah. Craig D worked with me a little bit on hooking it up at O'Leavers. And
easiest bookers in this town to work with.
Yeah, and it's just like a passion of mine to kind of stay plugged in. And, you know, I feel like it's nobody's fault, but I just feel like some people pass this town up. And
yeah.
It's like, if you just show them a good time or show them that people are supportive here, sometimes maybe they'll come back, maybe they won't. I know you and I were at a show that it was that Third Man show where Timmy's organizing. Yeah. And I know that, you know, they will probably never play here again. Timmy's organism will probably never play here again.
I got to put that one on Omaha. Omaha fucked up on that one. Man.
There was like no promotion, but
no promotion.
One of the things I'm forever going to be kicking my ass for is not going to that Starlight Desperation show.
That's a top tenner for
me. I still listen to all their albums.
Yeah. Today. That was an amazing, I think Ladyfinger played with him. It was.
Yeah, what the fuck was I doing? I don't know.
Dude, I had barely heard of that band. I listened to it for a couple of weeks. I must have been with you.
I think we all went together to Sour Creek Bar.
And it was incredible.
It was phenomenal, yeah.
10 people hanging out, you know? Yeah. Another one that was kind of disappointing, but he made the best of it, was Paul Collins. When Paul
is
Collins...
Is that in Lincoln?
This was before that. This was about a year before that. He played in the small stage at Slowdown. And when you see these guys... Oh, shit. I got a story after this. When you see these guys, you know, it's like, this is... fucking huge. You know, this guy was in the Nerves, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And the beat and whatever. It's Paul Collins. And then you see there's, you know, 15 people there. It's like, you want to show these guys a little respect, but that dude's a professional. He made the best of it and rocked it. And at the end of the show, I went and bought a record from him, and I'm not an autograph guy, but when Paul Collins is like, hey, you want me to sign your record? You say... Yes, you know, but something came up. I was just on vacation for Austin's bachelor party, and we were talking, just like sharing old stories, and the Richard Lloyd story.
Yeah. I still see that. Like, people won't mention names, but I'll see like certain people in Omaha still bring that story up about him playing at the waiting room, and people were taunting him. And they don't ever mention any names. And I always want to add my two cents. And then I'm like, yeah, it's better I just leave this one alone.
Well, okay, to be fair, we did nothing wrong. We weren't doing anything wrong, man.
No, I know. Oh, yeah, I know. That guy, he was, you know, I remember talking to Jim after, like, kind of during the show. And he's like, don't antagonize him.
Right.
Like, he's pretty much like a loose cannon right now.
Well, something was going on. He was strung out or something.
Yeah, it was weird.
And the fact that he, like, didn't want to leave the hotel room or even play the show.
Richard Lloyd from television. Oh. It's like Billy Ficca was there, too, which was sweet.
Yeah. Original drummer.
Yeah.
Which was not expected. No. But he, so this dude is... pretty amazing. I mean, not only did he play in television, but was, you know, buddies with Jimi Hendrix, and is an incredible guitar player.
And some of his solo stuff is phenomenal, yeah.
Just super important guy in the realm of music that we're interested in. And so it was, I think it was just you and I and Johnny. I think it was just the three of us, man. And we go there, and we're probably the three youngest dudes in there. Again, empty crowd. It was that waiting room, you know? So it's this big empty room, which just makes it that much more awkward when shit goes south.
Yeah.
And it went deep south. So we're hanging out, just enjoying the show. And for some reason, dude, he had a problem with you from the get-go.
He didn't like me.
It was like two songs in, and you had given him no reason. It really, I mean, honestly, that's how I remember it.
I don't know if I was too handsome at that point.
Something, but he's got it in for us. And he's just doing this thing where he's like, I'm not playing any more music until these assholes go stand by the bar. And then he's like, security, get these fuckers out of here.
Yeah, I think he knocked John's hat off, and then I may have exchanged words with him.
You did? Well, I don't know if you know this or if you've ever heard it. Mike Tulis came across a recording of this.
Oh, okay.
Whoever was running the soundboard recorded this exchange.
Oh, wow.
Jeff Lamont has it. We listened to it in Colorado. So we, listening to it was crazy, dude, because it kind of legitimized my memories, because we weren't throwing it back. I mean, eventually, because he was like talking a bunch of shit.
He seemed pretty thwacked out, but other people say he was. I don't know. To me, he
something
looked pretty strong.
Going
out. Yeah,
on.
Just a bad night or whatever.
But at one point, he looked at, he talked to the security, and he's like, security, get these three assholes out of here. And he like looks
that.
At him, and he's like, no, they're just standing there. I'm not going to bounce these guys.
When the owners of the bar are like, you guys are fine. Just don't go up there.
Yeah. So, we went back to the bar, but...
I think Jim said something to the effect of like... please don't beat up Richard Lloyd.
I think, honestly, Jeff, I think you and I left because it was getting pretty...
Yeah, and he was pretty unhinged, yeah.
Yeah, and it was like, well, maybe we shouldn't be here when the show's over. And then Johnny sticks around, Johnny stays behind.
Of course.
And they come up to him after the show and they're like, hey, sorry about that, man. Seemed to have been a misunderstanding. Like, and he takes pictures with him.
Great. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. No, they were fine. There were apologies.
It's just one of those days where you see someone who you adore and, like, you kind of have, you get rubbed the wrong way. You're like, damn, that kind of sucks. And then, you know, every time weird. I listen to television, like, I think about that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, God, what a dick.
Well, the one part that is definitely solidified in my memory, and we did not plan this out. This was a shared mind thing, but he asked, you know, whatever, halfway through the set, he's like, all right, you guys want to hear a Richard Lloyd song, a television song, or a Jimi Hendrix song? And you and I and Johnny in unison scream, Richard Hell! That's so
yeah.
Bad. That's another guy from television that had probably a better, well, more successful solo career than Richard Lloyd did, but he's just like, God damn it, blah, blah, blah. And he played a Richard Lloyd song, or Richard Hell song afterwards. He actually did it. It was kind of crazy. I don't know. That was a weird time. But I don't know, man. It's funny. I feel like this could be like a three-part podcast because, like, as we're just having this conversation, like, so much stuff is coming back to me of just, like,
A lot of stories, a lot of history. Even, I mean, Brandon and I hanging out with like people. You and I hang out. I mean, there was just a tight, like, I mean, I think the history goes back like so far, and mm-hmm. like whether it's music or just like going to see Ben and you guys are printing and like kicking it for a little while.
I remember one of the first times I met you. I think you just got married, and it was at Brothers. And it was before, like, these guys, I think, had even met you. So, like, it's just weird, yeah, like, how probably. Our friends intertwine with each other. And, like, I mean, there was that time in, like, 2005, 2006, 2007? Yeah. Is that when we, yeah, I don't know. Like, 3 to 5 years of just insaneness. Fun memories that we'll never forget. Some things that we wish we would forget.
Everything, yeah. And I look at, you know, those are...
But quintessential times that I think made us who we are and made, you know, us follow the paths that we are today. And, you know...
Everyone makes mistakes and has great times. And, like, you know, we all, like... I'm fortunate I'm here at 35, you know? Like, I think that everyone, like, gets to have fun. And, like, there's a point where it's, like, you know, we've had our fun and, like, we have memories and like it's they're fond.
Yeah.
It's good to like look back and like, I don't know.
That's probably what makes it easier to reminisce about that, about those days.
Yeah.
Like even the dark times is that we're still here and everybody's okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like we made it out alive, you know, and relatively unscathed. There was definitely, you know, we all had our tragedies for sure. But, I'm definitely grateful that everybody is all right, and it was a good time.
Yeah, and being parents now, like, I mean, as dads, do you guys like look at your kids and like want something like with our life experiences or your life experiences? Do you ever look at them and like, kind of like, it's cool to reflect back on your life and like, how am I gonna like, what am I gonna do when they're a certain age, or like, how do I navigate this situation, you know?
They're not going to get away with anything, that's for sure.
That's what we all think.
I think for me that at a point I realized, you know, you look up at your parents and I don't know, I feel like anyone that has parents that are involved in their lives in some capacity, you always think that they have all the answers. Mm-hmm. I quickly noticed, like, after I became a parent myself, that my mom did a good job. Did not know what the fuck she was. You know what I mean? You're right, just figuring it out as you go.
Yeah.
And the same
definitely
thing is
give them some slack.
Yeah. The that's same thing is like, you know, with raising kids, it's just like, all you can do is do your best. Mm-hmm. You know, they're their own people. They have their own personalities. They're going to do their own things, make their own decisions. All you can do is do your best of being helping available. Them through there and being there. And yeah. I don't know. It's crazy, yeah, because I don't know what I'm going to do, you know? Like, I don't know how I'm going to handle them
like
dating
bring,
or,
yeah,
like, any of that stuff.
They, like, bring you back to, like, Earth, though. Like, there's been times where I've, like, corrected my kids and, you know, like, maybe the wrong way, or I feel bad about maybe, like, you know? And then I, like, you internally think about it. It, like, they make you better
all
people
the
all
time.
The time.
All
like,
the time.
Constantly... Yeah.
Absolutely, all the time.
Are constantly changing the way you look at things and how you like it. Like being a dad is like essentially helped me be like better socially with people. You know. Like,
oh, for sure.
You tend to see the better people, I think.
Definitely.
As a dad. Yeah, I'm definitely a much more forgiving person. I think, you know what I mean. Like, yeah. Like stupid shit really tends to breeze over me. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, or whatever. That's the perspective is definitely one thing that I've gained.
And strong women, you know, like having like a strong God. Like backbone in your family, like
which 100%. Also, by the way, when you brought up the yin and the yang, which I've also talked about in towards Missy on this podcast even, but yeah, her and Sarah I think would be like BFFs. It's insane.
Oh, yeah, totally.
It's absolutely. Insane at like how much they're alike and they love the same things. And she taught me how to like, yeah, just go outside, go to the, you know, the park, go for a walk, like enjoy the world, you know, like there's so much out there to like experience. And I don't know.
Oh yeah, dude, they totally get along.
Yeah, I feel like having someone like that, that pushes you, like, and Sarah and I are coming up like 12 years next month, you know?
Congratulations, man.
It's crazy, but to think that, like, to have somebody push you, like, there are times, you know, nothing's ever perfect, but I'm just glad that I have someone that's, like, constantly, like, elevating, man. Because, like, you gotta catch up. You gotta catch up. You gotta stay on top of it. And, you know, she's having strong women in her life and being good dads is, like, you know, that's all, you know, that's all it's about.
That's all you could ask for. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Well, Jeff, dude, I got to thank you so much. Always good to see you. You know, we don't get to see each other a lot, but, you know, maintain correspondence over the years. Always good to see you, dude. Always good to see you doing well.
If we have to record a podcast with you once a week or something just to hang out, you know, like once every couple years or something, like, yeah.
But as we're just kind of wrapping this up, I know you got shit to do, but microphone's yours. You got... Yell at them. Tell them whatever you want, man.
Be good to one another. You know.
What are some... Hold on. Actually, it's not yours. I'm taking it back. What are some bands that people should look at right now? What's some new stuff that you're listening to that's good to go? Anything at all?
That's a good question. There's a lot. There's, like, almost too much. Yeah. I'm really into... there's like these funk compilations. They're called Eccentric Soul. And they like, they're basically just like compilations of like small labels from like 60s and 70s. It's this label will put out and it's just like soul comps. I'm really into that. Really into, you know, one Ty Siegel project I actually do enjoy is Gogs, and they just put out a new record. Okay. I think it's pretty solid. Basically, I've been just like, I've been listening to, you know, just like a lot of mixes of stuff, like a lot of soul comps.
Cool.
A lot of like psychedelic comps, you know, just stuff like that. I've been trying to like broaden, like when I say I search for something else, like I'm constantly like looking for that one song by that one band where I'm like, okay, now let me explore their catalog. Mm-hmm. But that's what music's about. That's why I love like Nuggets comps or like those back from the grave or, you know, those are the things that, as I get older, like I'm constantly like the one-offs, the weird one hits and
God Nuggets.
Yeah. Insane. There's just so much good stuff that, yeah.
If you guys don't know what we're talking about, Nuggets is like a psychedelic rock double disc compilation that is absolutely incredible, and it's full of bands you've probably never heard of.
But there's several, aren't there?
There's like Children's and Nuggets, and isn't there Children of Children's and Nuggets?
Yeah, there's tons. Like it just goes on and on, and then you get into like, you know, Pebbles, and you know it just becomes crazy. Then the British Invasion Nuggets,
and that's how the door opens, and yeah, you go through this like yeah,
it's a tunnel. But yeah, you know, I appreciate you guys having me on. It's fun to chat.
It's absolutely been great. Well, to you Omaha Talkers out there, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in, as it were. Be on the lookout for new stuff. I know we say this all the time, but we do have some more great guests coming up. We've got some restaurateurs in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be pretty interesting. People you've not heard from yet. And we've also got some other wild cards coming in. So
I also, Rilo wants to do an episode about Disney World and Disney. Go. So I think that's there might be a little shorty.
There we go.
So
that would be great.
Yep.
Should I bring Hudson?
Yeah.
And still just scream into the, oh my God.
Just make the like dinosaurs she will shrill.
Throw things at your
I
face.
I love that name, by the way.
Thank Hudson. You.
It's a good one.
Thank you. Thank you. I thought of that. It came out of nowhere, you know? Yeah, man. Thanks to both of you. Love you guys.
Yeah, thank you both.
Love you too.
Great show. And Omaha Talkers, we'll talk to you soon.